Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we're here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, the center of it all. Well, this past weekend was Labor Day. We're going to have a few thoughts on labor, chores, working. Also, I have a recipe to share. You may consider it weird, but we've had a few taste tests here, and
right, we're going to call this the, what did I say? A new esoteric item, or
it
something?
It is an esoteric item: okra marshmallow delights. You more about that later, and we're going to have a little bit on mastication and bitters, how we digest and taste things. That'll be good. We have a good show for you, so stick around. So, Donna, let's talk about work.
Right. This was in the New York Times, maybe for Labor Day, whatever, but the headline caught my eye. The headline was, "The household chores you are avoiding are key to a deeper life." Okay, I'm going, oh, just the motivation I need to, you know, clean out that closet. She's talking about a book she read. Sohan. S-O-H-A-N.
Ah, there you go.
New York Times. Anyway. Oh, yes. She is a United Methodist minister. And her book is Here, A Spirituality of Staying in a Culture of Leaving. Oh, okay. But she's talking about a book she read called The Wisdom Way of Knowing, another Episcopalian priest, that she's wondering about getting lost in our culture's emphasis on time management. Oh. And she goes back to the Benedictines, who, we got three different denominations here going on. So we're back to the old Benedictines, and their motto in Latin was Ora et Labora, pray and work. And she says, as Western Europe fell into a political and cultural disarray during the early Middle Ages after the fall of the Roman Empire, so this is quite historical, some scholars claim that the Benedictines served as a steady but silent pillar through their devotion to Ora et Labora. The Benedictines introduced cutting-edge agricultural methods to their neighbors, helped them to cultivate wastelands for food and welfare. And during a time when the majority of the continent was illiterate, the Benedictines promoted literacy and preserved classic manuscripts. So they were obviously written out by hand, so they were busy. They kept themselves busy.
Ora labor, work. And pray, work and pray. So not just all of the mind, you have to keep your hands busy too.
Yeah, your body has to do things. She says, scientific studies provide evidence that this phenomena, researchers have found that we're more likely to overcome a relational or work-related impasse, not when we are hunched over our desks in rapt concentration or collaborating in a Zoom meeting, but rather on breaks when we do boring activities when our minds wander. Approximately one-fifth of our most creative ideas emerge during these times. It's called generative mind wandering needs to be uplifting and playful. So, she says the theory is that we must nourish all our active modes of learning, heart, mind, and body. This is true. Our minds need intellectual stimulation. Our hearts need to grow in emotional awareness and empathy. And our bodies need to labor for well-being to ourselves and others. Of course, I suppose going to the gym counts as this sort of thing, too. What? I don't know. I don't go to the gym, but
yeah,
maybe that's why people are going to the gym, because your body is moving and your mind can wander. It's just a life of pure leisure and contemplation. or the opposite of constant labor, is lopsided, stifling healthy growth and development. So, you know, I have to say, I find this true. One of the things that keeps me cooking, even when I don't have to sometimes, is when I'm, you know, because not that I'm not thinking, but when you're cooking, a lot of what you're doing is chopping, peeling, standing there, you know, but your hands, you know, you are standing upright, you are concentrating, but you're doing sort of, especially if you cook a lot or anything that you do a lot, I'm sure gardening is this way too, just that repetitive motion of your body and your hands and, you know, the way your shoulder, you know, you're not, your mind is all over the place. Right. And I find that really relaxing.
Right. And you realize that there, if you live in a house or live in an apartment, there are chores to do. If you live by yourself, there's chores to do. If you have a family, there's more chores to do. Thinking of all the washing, folding, doing dishes, picking up, vacuuming, all of that stuff. And you can either holler at your family to do it, or a trend, and actually this author talked about it in her article, was there's a rise in hiring other people to come and clean your house or make your meals and deliver it to your door, or do the chores.
A ways for someone to make money off of your hesitations to take care of yourself.
Like
right?
Anything unpleasant, you should hire some, I hate to say it, but hire some underling to do it. And the idea of doing that, I think things get lost because, well, like you say, Donna, there's a lot of good things to be said for thinking while you're doing chores. You know, I used to kind of, well, of course, you go through being told to pick up your clothes and help your mom with the dishes and go out and mow the lawn. And boy, that's just work. That's not so good. But you realize it is for the good of the family. It's how people get along. We need to eat.
It's for your own good. I mean, I know there's always a backlash about this because, of course, it's been called women's work and doing too much of it. And not enough of other things. I mean, we're talking about balance here, okay? Find your own sweet spot. Here's how I am with housework. If it's, it reminds me of, I can't remember the poet. Anyway, he's also, William Stafford. He has a book where he talks about teaching writing, right? Teaching students how to write. And he says to them, they need to write every day, you know, just to get that going. And he says, if you think your writing isn't good enough and you're criticizing yourself and you're not writing and you're not writing, lower your standards. Just do it. And I feel that way about housework because, of course, housework is never done. Cooking is never done. You know, you eat and then you're hungry again the next day. You run the vacuum cleaner and 3 days later, there's dust bunnies everywhere. It's not like, you know, there is an immediate satisfaction, but it's repetitive. So there has to be a balance, and everyone needs to find their own balance where it's good enough, you know, that you've done it, you feel good about organizing yourself, your space, you're grateful that you have a house to clean, for goodness sake, and food to cook and family to take care of. You know, there's that place where sorry to be so spiritual here, but work is worship. It's gratitude for the life that you have. You know, okay, a little personal here. I've had a pinched nerve in my back and doing some things has become really a little more difficult momentarily. So I remember the last time this happened, by the time I got it healed up again, I was so grateful that I could, you know, get down and scrub the stairs on my knees and things like that. But that bit of gratitude where we just bend ourselves to necessity, you know, we are creatures. We are messy creatures. We are voracious creatures. And this creates work, labor, which is a good thing in balance. And it's an individual thing and something to be appreciated and cultivated by all genders. This is not a gender thing. Hello.
That's right. That's right. In the news lately, there are the hotel workers all over the United States are on strike, and talk about a repetitive task. I spent some time working as a hotel maid. Put myself through college doing some of that, and it's not really your romantic sort of work, or serving, being a waitress is not. But you're moving and you're doing things that need to be done in little bits at a time. But we need to realize that all that stuff needs to be done, and it needs to be paid fairly. So
absolutely, that reminds me. So in my younger days, before I was a chef, I was a waitress, right? Like Lana said, there's an age where you just do it, and I actually enjoyed it. It's very social in a lot of ways, and, you know, challenging. And at the time, there were not computers. So, you know, you had to write everything down in this tiny little book and in kind of a very dark circumstances. And then you had to add it all up at the end in your head, right? Fortunately, I'm pretty good at that, and I didn't make a lot of mistakes. But there are those of you who are old enough to remember that you always had to check your bill because it was done in somebody's head by hand, right?
True.
But the restaurateur that I worked for and just adored, he used to say, and we would do this before there was a big catering event, when everybody was poised to go out and serve all the guests and we were really organized and it was a whole brigade, he would say, remember, to serve is to rule. And you understand that when you do a lot of service jobs in some senses, you know, you are anticipating people's behaviors and their needs, and you have to understand them quite well. So, you know, when you're watching Upstairs, Downstairs, or Downton Abbey, and you look at what the servants are doing, those upper crusty people are very dependent on service. And the best of them are usually quite grateful. It's an art form, and it is a wonderful thing. So to serve is to rule.
And we can all serve ourselves, serve our families. And once you take care of yourself and do chores for yourself, you're a bit more understanding of the rest of the world. Yes, you are.
You know, one of my big deal celebrity clients used to do this, and I thought it was brilliant. Once a year, she would take 2 weeks where she would send all of the help home.
Ha!
And then do it all herself, because that way she knew how to do it, knew what was going on, had a better understanding of the whole thing. She didn't send me away. She still wanted the food cooked. But, you know, I would see her clopping around her in little high heels, folding tea towels and things like that. It was a very sensible thing, and I appreciated the attitude that she had about that.
Everybody can do this. Good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, that was a good
It's grounding. It's very, yeah, very grounding and calming and, you know, appreciation for the domestic arts.
Yes. Celebrating work, celebrating labor. We really realize you need all that kind of stuff to keep ourselves going. So thanks to all the workers, and thanks to ourselves for doing this too. Well, I've been threatening to do this, Donna.
I can't stop eating these little things. Go for it, Lana.
I brought in a treat. And I thought, right across this restaurant, I thought, no, this will never work. Well, you've heard...
Okay, this is one of the most unexpected things that I have ever eaten that I really like this.
See? You've heard me talk before about a book about okra, written by Chris Smith. And okra, dare I say, call him a fanatic? He seems like a really fun guy. Growing, eating, all things okra. And what I have created, I followed his recipe and made something I've been meaning to do. It's called, get this into your head, Okra Marshmallow Delights. There you go. Now, Here's what this little is, Lana.
By the way, Lana grows beautiful, beautiful okra, and now it's the prime season.
It is.
Here we go.
Okra can do a lot of things, and people either always come in, isn't it slimy, they say. And yes, it is. But one can either fight it or celebrate the mucilaginous stuff. And Chris Smith, the okra guru here, passes along a recipe by Katrina Blair for Okra Marshmallow Delights. This creative recipe falls squarely into the you've got to try it to believe it category. If you want to make these, keep a stash of these perfectly sweet, deep green, chewy treats around and hand them out to when somebody says they don't like okra, which happens a lot, so make a lot of them. The mixture tends to flatten out while you dehydrate this stuff. So I'll kind of walk you through how this works here. It's a very simple, and it really plays on the fact you're dealing with a really strange vegetable here. The sliminess, the mucilaginous trait of okra really comes out when you do this. You take okra, and I use small pods, cut off the tops.
Small, like 2 inches, right?
Yeah, thumb size.
Right, so thumb less size. Fibrous. Okay.
Less fibrous, but nice and green.
Yeah,
and
not the 4-inch pods.
No. Yeah. Okay, 2 cups sliced fresh okra. 1 cup water as needed to help it liquefy. 1/2 cup honey, 2 tablespoons vanilla. Put that stuff in a blender.
Not teaspoon.
No, 2 tablespoons vanilla.
Oh, okay, that's the flavoring.
The smell of this is pretty good.
Okay.
Very vanilla-y. That's it. 4 ingredients, okra, water, honey, vanilla. That's it. You put it in the food processor and pulse. Now, of course, it's going to mush up pretty fast. Okra is not a hard vegetable.
No, it has a lot of water in it. Yeah.
And, okay, so you open up the top. There's this green stuff. And I tried to pour it out. It does not pour. It's like you have a
glops.
A cube of Jell-O sort of in there.
Okay.
And so to get it out, actually, I had to run my hand underneath it, and it came out like slime. It all kinds of stuck together. And it says here, this blend
texture.
The okra, okay? And then what you want to do is take all of this this slime and put it in a food dryer. For dehydrator sheets, put it in long strips. Since I have a round food dryer,
so does it? Did it stretch?
It did stretch.
Okay.
It did stretch. So I stretched this goo around 2 layers of my round food dryer using the kind of sheets that you'd put in a food dryer for fruit leather.
Okay,
you
so
don't just want
some
to put it
silicone-y
on a rack.
Thing, right? Because it's probably very sticky.
It's very sticky, and also you don't want it to run down. And I don't think it ran down. It stuck to itself pretty well. But think of it as fruit leather. But here it is. Here it is, okra leather.
Yeah, but it's not leathery.
No. Okay, so you put it in a food dryer and dry it at 115 degrees. For about 6 hours. It took me longer. This is summer. It was
with high humidity,
yeah, high
right?
Humidity. So Donna saw this process about halfway through.
Right, I saw it in the dehydrator.
You got to come and look at this. I pick off the cover and said, look at that, Donna. What did you see?
It looks sort of like a big glob of insect spit.
Doesn't that sound tasty? It did. Very green and kind of bubbly. And I was thinking of
a little translucent.
And like the recipe says, don't expect, it says
right.
Marshmallow.
This is weird. A common word these days, but this is definitely a weird recipe. But weird in a good way.
In a good way. So now you're supposed to dry it until... Not until it's hard, but until it's kind of, well, think of gummy bears.
Yeah. That's a good explanation of
not,
it.
It's not really... as hard as fruit leather, but
no.
It's kind of like gummy bear guts.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Here it is, and there it is. And then I use the scissors to cut them.
Did you have to oil the scissors blade to keep it?
No,
from...
I didn't. I wash it off every now and then.
Okay, okay.
And then, so I had two donuts of green slime. And then by the time it wasn't sticky anymore, I did run a spatula underneath it. It didn't stick too bad, just a little bit, you know,
right.
Kind of stuck.
Because it's not super sweet, and it doesn't have sugar in it.
No.
And not that much honey.
No. And so I cut it in chunks, and it rolled up the little chunks a little bit, so they're kind of the size of your thumb. I suppose you could make them bigger. And they're not white, because this is okra. And it probably, you know, it kind of goes greenish brownish, khaki color.
Yeah, I would say right.
So
yeah,
that adds to the weirdness. So
they're not vibrant in color.
No. And then the recipe calls for chopped cashews to roll them in. I didn't have cashews, so I chopped up some almonds and I rolled them in chopped almonds. I suppose you could roll it in
pecans.
Yeah, other things. You know, I don't. I think powdered sugar would probably get soggy.
It would.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, a nut is good.
Yeah. So, okra marshmallow delights. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a note here way at the bottom. These marshmallow treats can be eaten raw or skewered on a stick and warmed over a fire. I can't imagine doing that. I think it'd just be kind of icky, but...
I don't... Because... I mean, they're perfectly good like this. They're a candy-like thing, but they're not so sweet that they're at all cloying.
Because I can't believe how many of these Don has already eaten, and the show's not even half over yet.
I'm just chewing... Okay, now here's a couple things you need to know. Okra is really good for you. It has prebiotics. So it has that fiber in it, like inulin or other things that are really good in your intestines, because the probiotics in your belly feed very happily on them in a good way. So okra, I was reading this recently, something, and I went, what? They were talking about okra pills that people who have like... sort of disturbed intestines, irritable bowel syndrome and stuff like that, are given sometimes okra pills because it builds up the good bacteria in your intestines. So this is, you can think of this as something actually kind of healthy, but it tastes like as you're reading the recipe, I'm in my mind wondering if there's some kind of rather ancient derivation of this. I mean, I can't imagine this woman just came up with this out of nowhere.
No,
Does she say anything?
Well, see, people have been kind of playing around with this okra mucilage, okra slime, for a long time.
Well, yeah.
And okra is part of the mallow family. Mallow, as in there is a plant called marshmallow. I don't know what is used off that plant, because I know it as a big flowering plant. I don't know.
Well, mallows herbally are used to soothe.
Yeah.
Like you can rub it on a sore or a blister or... You know, things like that. It's kind of calming topically, and it must do the same thing internally as well. It's mucilaginic, right?
I would think so. Well, I mentioned too, you thought maybe before people invented Cuisinarts,
right? You can pound it until it gelled out like that, and then if you could spread it out to dry in the sun too.
Mm-hmm.
So. I bet this is a really, really old, some Middle Eastern sweets are often like that.
Yeah, kind of this jelly thing surrounded by dust of some
sugars.
Sort.
But, yeah, and they're usually much sweeter. But this is, I gotta say, I kind of like this one.
This is my first stab at Okra Marshmallow Delights. I think... I should put this on the Donalana Kitchen recipe page, because you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it, but it does work.
I mean, even children would eat these things.
Well, yeah, they look kind of brown and icky. You could, you know, say, here, eat this brown and icky thing.
And well, they don't look any more brown and icky than a date, for example.
Oh, that's true. You know
how we used to give, there used to be a mixture where they would chop up dates and roll them in coconut. We used to call this hippie kid candy.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it was sweet. They're not as sweet as a date.
Yeah. But I could, upping the honey in there might be good, but
that would make them more sticky, though. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I think they're really, but how about you hand these out for Halloween treats and see what happens?
I bet. Ew, people would say.
Oh, no, they're good.
Once you eat one, you go, what in the world is in my mouth?
It's a textural thing because the flavor is very mild. It's just vanilla and almond powder and the texture is familiar from eating marshmallows, mm-hmm. but there's no gelatin in them, so mm-hmm. they're vegan, right? I'm very pleased what you've done here.
Well, I'm glad. Good. Okra Marshmallow Delights. Ha! You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Well, we talked about doing chores, and we talked about okra marshmallow delights. Oh, yes. We have got a little bit from our archives here. We'll talk about eating things on this show, and I pulled up a little bit from a past show from February 2020 about mastication, about chewing things, Donna. We've got to think about that every now and then.
That was before I chewed these little candies that you've made.
Hey, yeah, yeah.
Marshmallow Okra Delights.
Well, yeah, there you go.
I'm masticating
them. We'll talk about mastication and bitters here. And this is from February 2020. The other voice you hear in here is Cynthia McClure. She was in kind of a taste testing event with us. So, you probably think you already know how to chew your food. I thought I knew how to chew my food, but...
Or don't pay attention to how you chew your food.
You never think about it. My God, we know how to do that. Let's look at this topic a little more closely. How many times do you chew your food? They always say, it sounds so silly, 30 times, 40 times. That sounds so icky.
We used to, when I was young... There was a thing going around. You're supposed to chew your brown rice 100 times. Of course, I'm incapable of doing that. But yeah.
Oh, my.
Tedious, right?
It evidently does make a difference because when we start to chew our food properly, there are three significant health benefits: weight control, optimal nutrient absorption, and smooth digestion. And who isn't interested in all of those? It brings on salivation and others' physiological reaction. And the weight control is because of what this chewing and the reactions in your mouth, what that does to your food. It's really good.
Right. They always say digestion begins in the mouth because actually the chewing stimulates the salivary gland. So you're beginning your digestive process while you're chewing.
And they're finding out it really does make a difference. There's something called amylase, and other enzymes present in saliva start breaking down carbohydrates in the food. And even more important, chewing and swallowing activates dozens of chemical reactions in the stomach, pancreas, and small intestine. If you don't chew thoroughly, your gut doesn't get the message that nutrition is coming, and it doesn't know what to do with all of this stuff. You kind of have to take your time and wake up the enzymes in your system. Also, the idea of slowing down when chewing your food and drinking things gives your body adequate time to prepare for nutrients and calories that come on its way. Because if you don't give it time, your body doesn't make good use of what you are sending it down. You were talking to me about, Donna, about chewing and... Well, I think there's no,
well, in the weight loss dimension, my friend Ann Kinzel was telling me in the Weight Watcher system, which uses points rather than calories, that if you, for example, if you make a smoothie that has yogurt in it, it's more points than if you just eat the yogurt and then have the fruit because you're chewing. Whereas if you've used the blender to make a smoothie, the blender is making it all into smaller particles, but it's not adding the enzymes, of course, that chewing does. So there are some metabolic things which do lead to weight reduction if you are chewing your food.
Chewing, an important thing. Don't think of chewing as a chore because that chewing helps us digest. Yeah, and so slow down. Center yourself.
Well,
be present.
The only way I can make myself chew longer is if I'm really concentrating on the flavors in the food, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't just gulp and go. You need to appreciate your food. And just that process of reminding myself to really taste as deeply as I can does make one chew a little bit longer. You got to trick yourself into these
things. So remember, it's about digestion. It's about nutrient absorption, which is important.
Well, because it makes sense. The smaller the particles are, the more easily your body is able to absorb the nutrition it makes more surface area. For example, if you're eating salad and you break the leaves down into little tiny bits, you get better absorption of the nutrients in them.
So let's work with those enzymes and all those bacteria that we have in our gut, and let's get that stuff all stimulated. Yes, yes. We're going to keep on talking about tasting and things we put in our mouth. Donna, what do you have for us
today?
Well,
we're also going to, when we bring up digestion, the first thing that springs to my mind is digestive bitters.
Oh.
So we're going to talk about bitters. Now, bitters are... You know, you have the five flavors: sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and umami or savory. But bitter is one of the five different sensations that your taste buds actually respond to. And all of those flavor categories are necessary. And bitters is the one that we probably use the least. The reaction to bitters comes from a lot of plants in nature that are very bitter are actually toxic. So your body wants to be careful of those things. But there are also many bitters that are, like, for example, dandelion root and dandelion leaf. Now, those, especially the if you pick the dandelions early in the spring and they have little leaves, they're not as bitter. But if you're growing them and putting them in a salad and you eat a more mature, it's quite bitter to the taste buds, as is endive, which people put in salads, or
chicory.
All of those leaves are bitters, but they're also, particularly dandelion, is a tonic for the liver, for example. I mean, and that's you know, I don't think even the FDA would argue with me about that. It's well known. It's not snake oil. You know, dandelion root tincture, dandelion tea, dandelion leaves, all of those things are quite good for you. So before the days of, well, what they used to call patent medicine, a lot of the herbs were concocted and
by dissolving the plants and the barks and the seeds and whatever they were using in alcohol. So now we use a lot of bitters in cocktails, but there's a long history behind that. But what we're going to do today, we're going to have an on-air tasting. So I'm going to rely on Lana and Cynthia to, I'm going to say what we're doing, and then they're going to taste it, and they're going to have to describe what they're feeling. So one of the things I like to do in the evening, really after dinner, is have a mocktail. One does not necessarily want to drink every evening, but there is a point after dinner where you're kind of settled down and you want either a hot beverage or a cold beverage or something. And my go-to is often to take some just plain seltzer water or one of those lightly flavored ones. Add in a few shakes of bitters, and I have different ones, depending on my mood, right? And maybe a spritz of lemon or something like that. So we're going to have little, I'm opening a can of just pretty much plain club soda, and we're going to start with the well-known one. It's an old, and many, many brands still make it. It's called Swedish Bitters.
Mm-hmm. These jars that are sitting out here, they look like snake oil sort of medicine bottles.
In one of the books I was reading, another way it said to taste bitters is to sprinkle a little on the back of your hand and rub it in, because then you can smell the herbs that are in it. Like I'm doing this one, I can smell the celery when I've rubbed it on the back of my hands.
Actually,
it smells perfumey.
Yeah, but it's still bitter.
The smell is absolutely amazing. And the aftertaste is, yes, it is. It's
licorice.
Bitter.
There's like
bitter.
Let's see. What do they say is in here? It just says herbs, spices. It doesn't even say which
ones. Oh, that
ones.
Sounds pretty dangerous. But anyway.
Lemon and orange peel, like an orange peel smell. And then cloves and maybe some anise.
Probably quite a few things. But it's when you put it in a little soda water, it's don't you find it refreshing?
It ups the soda water considerably. And it's just like a fruit. What is it? Grapefruit or what? Soda water?
Oh, yeah. This is one of those, unsweetened, calorie-free, sugar-free, sodium-free, bubbly water. This one is a grapefruit. But I use the grapefruit because I find it has the least amount of flavor of all of the current ones.
That was pleasant.
So that's a Swedish one, and there are multiple brands of it. Okay, now here's one that's going to really wake you up. In fact,
it's in an eyedropper. It's very tiny bottle.
Right. Okay, guys. I want it strong, so I'm not going to put much water in this one. See what you think. This one is very identifiable.
Who?
Cynthia.
What are you doing to us, Donna?
Oh, I'm waking up your palate. This is a ginger bitter. This is a brand called King Floyd's.
It doesn't smell like the other one. It's not a strong smell.
No, it's completely different.
But this one the aftertaste, all of a sudden, oh, boy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this
oh
one
God.
Is.
Oh, the kick on this.
And we're barely taking a drop.
My God.
It's just, this is ginger and gentian and maple syrup. Now, gentian. Now, do you remember this as a kid? Did your mother ever do this? It's purple. And what did mother use it for? You got a sore, I think, in your mouth or something?
Is that the one that burned?
Gentian violet?
Really? I know it as a plant. I didn't know one could ingest part of it.
No, she used to, as a kid, if we would get like a canker sore or something inside your mouth, she would take a Q-tip and dip it in the bottle of gentian violet, which was very purple tasted really awful. And she would paint the canker sore in your mouth.
Yeah, and it meant to. That is strong. Well, surprisingly so.
Yeah.
The aftertaste is not going away.
No, it's not.
It's kind of like if you bite into a jalapeno. And then there's that jalapeno.
It's strong. Like this morning when I was playing around with this, I was opening the bottles and just taking a straight shot into my mouth.
Oh, my God.
This one was like.
Yeah.
Ginger has a lot of heat in it, you know.
Yeah.
And
I could see it with some kind of, if you did make a cocktail with it, a very simple plain vodka, and then you add that to it, it'll up whatever you add. Or even the
water. You could do vodka and soda and this and maybe some more maple syrup and then a little lemon would make a cocktail.
Or, definitely you would need to add a simple syrup.
Or I would make this into a mocktail and just leave the vodka out.
So
pour the soda, add the ginger bitters, a little lemon, and maybe a little bit of either simple syrup or maple syrup or something like that.
Yeah, it's not an unpleasant flavor or aftertaste, and it does have that heat, but a different kind of heat.
It really, with a cold, if you have a cold and a scratchy throat, I can feel it in my throat still.
Yeah. Oh, it's still there. And I have heard, and actually I've experienced, ginger settles your stomach.
Yes.
Why does it work? I suppose
why they give ginger ale to you when you have the flu.
You could up your game if you have a sick child or sick adult or a man child or something, you know. And they're not feeling good, and you give them ginger ale, and you give them a little bit of that in the ginger.
Oh, yeah, you could
up the game.
You could strengthen the ginger.
Oh, the fact that it stays around. I like it.
I can still feel it in my throat.
So this is probably made from concocting it with ginger root.
Oh, yeah.
Ginger root.
Very strong ginger. Okay. Oh. Now, this is another flavor from the same brand. This is another King Floyd's. Now, this is an orange bitters. Now, this might be one, and you can cook with bitters. This might be a good cooking one as well.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is interesting. The smell and the taste
are different.
It starts out one way and ends up the other way. Orange, how nice.
It's like biting into the skin of an orange.
Yeah, it's the orange peel.
This one is, it's bitter orange peel.
It is.
And other secret herbs and spices. They don't even tell you.
They can get away with saying secret.
Here, Lana, put this on the back of your hand and rub it and smell. You'll see. It's, rub it in. Like you do with perfume when you want to.
Vanilla.
Yeah, I'm getting a little, like, cinnamon in there, maybe. And
is this a different one?
No, this is the orange one. Mm. See, it does not smell like it tastes. Isn't
it doesn't smell like it tastes at all.
Now I can see why they make simple syrups to go with all this, to sweeten it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, bitter and sweet.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're doing. Okay, now the last one we're going to take, this is a classic. It's called Peychaud. Peychaud, Peychaud's bitters, or Peychaud's, or what? Something.
I have that
like.
At home.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's pretty.
The two most common ones that you can buy in almost any either grocery store or liquor store are Angostura and Peychaud's. Mm-hmm. They're the two that have survived as a commercial. Entity for a long time. So it says. I'm going to read from this book, A Spirited History of a Classic Cure-All, Bitters, Cocktails, Recipes, and Formulas, and Bitters, by Brad Thomas Parsons. So for the Peychaud's, it says, when discussing a bitters landscape that fairly quickly went from hundreds of brands to just a handful of survivors, possibly there's speculation that through the sampling of too many of Mr. Peychaud's spice brandies, the thickened tongue of the imbiber slurred the word coquettier into cocktail.
Oh, really?
It's possible. These are my little French granny sipper cups, so you use like maybe an ounce or something.
Now, how many people do you know that has quite a collection of French granny sipper cups?
And they're a beautiful blue, and they look like tiny little...
Yeah, there's some
root beer mugs.
Yeah, depression glass, and they're about an inch tall.
Now that is Aunt Anise.
Yeah, it is.
Ooh, I like anise. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what one small drop will do. Yes,
that was
well. Our digestions should be
in good.
Coming along swimmingly.
You've been listening to this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, and This is KHOI. Stick around for more. That was a bit about mastication and bitters. We've got more good things on the Donna Lena Kitchen. You can go to khoifm.org to find out more. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lena Kitchen. Donna, tell folks about our podcast.
Oh, right. So the same thing we do on the radio is we do it live on the radio, and then it's recorded, and it goes into our podcast. So the live show is on Tuesdays, and the podcast of the same material comes out on Thursdays. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, put in Donna Lena. That is one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A. Kitchen, and there you will find us.
Good, good. And thank you for listening to us and spreading the word. It's nice to meet folks that actually listen to this program, Donna. We find there's a lot of good things you can learn. We're talking about
well, we have a good time anyway.
I have learned a whole lot. We've got some, besides the dish of Okra Marshmallow Delights that we are
now. That was
on
a big
today.
Learning experience for me. You know, I have a young friend, and I keep saying the wonderful thing about, because he's studying culinary arts, and I say the wonderful thing about cooking is you will spend your whole life. There's always something new to learn about cooking and food.
Yes, always something new to taste too. Oh, something new to cooking in. About cooking and food, Donna, you gave me some seeds earlier in the year. The seeds have come to fruition. So I brought it along. It is a summer squash. It is a trombocino. One of those long green things. So talk about that.
Well, okay. So there is a seed breeding company. They also sell the seeds. They actually grow the vegetables and sell them. How I found them was it is an outgrowth of a project between Cornell University and their breeding plant and the Stone Barn Center, which is a, you know, all things food and farming, wonderful restaurant, etc. So they are picking certain vegetable varieties and they are breeding for flavor. Get that. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I'm always interested in. So I buy the seeds and give them to Lena because I want to eat them, but I'm not a good grower particularly. So this particular one is called a center cut squash seed. It looks like a zucchini, some zucchinis. It has a slightly more bulbous bottom. Now, I like trombocinos. I actually have grown them. They're usually pale skinned and you can let them get not too big. They are related to a butternut, but they will curl around a little bit and kind of have a little serpentine shape to them and a mild but nice flavor. And so I was interested in these because it says a new chapter for the heirloom trombocino and an answer to the ho-hum zucchini. Young green squash were selected for their sweet, nutty flavor and meaty texture. 70 days to harvest. So this is a breeding project, and Lena has grown them, and she's brought the first one in, and I am not a huge zucchini fan, as we have grumbled along, because
this will be a test.
Right. They don't have a lot of, I mean, I'm not expecting, let's say that this will have a subtle flavor. And when you're cooking, there are zucchinis that I like, especially, like, what are they called? Codzels or something? The ones with
Cocozel.
Okay. With the bumps on them and stripes, and those tend to have a little more flavor with them. So squash notoriously cross-pollinate and do things like that.
Right, right.
So these are probably not that big of a difficulty to breed. So I'm looking forward to it, and I will keep the seasonings delicate because, you know, you can cover it with a flavor of something
good.
Like this.
Give us a squash report.
Oh, thank you for growing it, Lana.
It's center cut squash from a company called
Row 7.
There you go. So. And you brought in something else. An apple. An apple.
Oh, yeah. This is up. So we're getting into apple season. Here we go. This one comes from Helen Gunderson's garden, and it is called a russet razor. What do you think, Lana?
Funny looking apple. I tasted it. It's very tasty. The outside of it is greenish khaki colored.
Brown.
It looks
yeah.
like it looks like a pear.
It
does. Outside.
It looks like a bosque pear in coloring, kind of, and it has that thick kind of almost not entirely sandpaperish, but it has a texture to the mm-hmm. skin. So
and
you know,
good.
Not all apples are red and yellow. This one is. Quite unusual looking, but what do you think of the flavor?
I think it's quite lovely.
It's a little Granny Smith-ish, but
yeah.
maybe more.
I wonder how. Well, I don't know whether it's a. See, you want to know if they're keepers? Are they cooking apples? Anyway,
I would try cooking with this one
I would
for
too.
Sure because it's
too.
So close to Granny. It's tart. It's certainly not mushy.
See, things can be different colors and mm-hmm. taste just fine. This apple is actually, it's kind of the color of the Okra Marshmallow Delights. Khaki color. So we have a theme going here.
Okay, I did read in the New York Times. No, Washington Post, sorry. Brown is the new color for the year, right?
Oh, Donna.
I mean, yeah, they could have called it chocolate or chestnut or something. Brown. I mean, I happen to love brown, but
that's good. Well,
you know, so
haven't done that. Done brown in a while.
I think it was neon green for the summer. Isn't that the? What's the brat color? Neon green or something. Anyway,
totally missed that one.
Yeah. So, but the interior designers are not going for neon green. Apparently, they're going for brown. I like brown. It's calm. It's earthy.
Chocolate.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good. Well. We have something else coming up here. I have some information from the Practical Farmers of Iowa. And they have a little announcement here about some things that you can do for your soil.
Practical Farmers of Iowa is looking for landowners who want to help restore natural habitat on their property and get help doing it. It's part of a larger effort to help farmers become more environmentally friendly. PFI's Habitat Incentive Program offers farmers a financial incentive to plant prairie strips on their land, for example. PFI's Grace Yee says those strips restore habitat for native species, while at the same time reducing soil erosion.
All of these practices are going to have multiple benefits, and so they're going to be good for soil health, good for water quality improvement, and also provide habitat for wildlife.
In addition to the prairie strip portion of the Habitat Incentive Program, PFI is also making incentives available to do precision conservation analysis on farmers' land, which helps them make use of unproductive acres. Yee says the end goal of the program is different for most of the farmers who apply. For some, it might be reducing soil erosion and runoff into nearby waterways. For others, it might be finding a productive way to use other acres.
For some farmers, it might be that corner of the farm is low yielding, it's difficult to farm with because it's maybe steep and slope or just weird turnaround, so they can easily, you know, round out the field.
In order to be eligible for the program, at least 50% of the acres the farmer plans to change has to be unprofitable. The incentive, funded by federal and state sources, is capped at $10,000. This is Mark Moran for Iowa News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
That was a little information from Practical Farmers of Iowa. Also, here's some upcoming things. Well, one upcoming thing. This weekend, KHOI fundraiser book sale. Shop for books, music, movies, games, puzzles, and more. All proceeds go to your community radio station, this very one that is in your ears right now. Friday, September 6th, starting at 4 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Saturday starts at 10 and Sunday starts at 1 p.m. You can still drop off some books at the radio station until Thursday. There you go. It'll be a fine weekend. I always get rid of many and end up with many,
yep.
too.
It's a recycling program here.
It is. That's a KHOI book sale this weekend. You've been listening to the Donalena Kitchen. You can find out more about this radio station and the Donalena Kitchen by going to www.khoifm.org. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.